Now the Sefer HaChinuch goes a little bit on a poetic streak again. Again, we're towards the end of Mitzvah 95, building the Beis HaMikdash. The Ulam, Ein Likrosenu Mikas HaKasilim, don't call me from the group of fools. Botzi'enu Kol Ruchenu Bidvarim. Again, it rhymes. Because we put everything that we thought out with words. Because with a great amount of garbage, sometimes there'll be a little bit of food, so to speak, of good stuff mixed in with the bad. Again, rhyming. Because we also saw that the sages say similar things to what we just said previously, which is that the details about different korbanos are supposed to draw your attention and make you pay greater attention to the message that the korban is supposed to give to you. So, for example, shamru b'korban sota. So there is a korban that the sota has to bring, a suspected adulteress, when she comes to the Beis HaMikdash for her ordeal of drinking the bitter waters. So she also has to bring a korban. So that korban is barley, is made of barley, whereas most of the menachos, the meal offerings, are fine wheat flour, but she has to bring barley. Why? He asked the maisa behema lefigach takriv sorim. So she did an animalistic thing that she slept around. She didn't limit her sexual exploits to the holiness of the Jewish marriage like she was supposed to. So she might have engaged in animalistic behaviors. So for that reason, that she has to bring a korban that consists of animal fodder. Right, but she suspected. The whole point is that she suspected of doing something like this. That's correct. But the whole ordeal revolves around the suspicion of that, so for that reason, she has to bring an offering of animal food, which is barley. I guess tell that to all our children theaters nowadays, that it's really animal food. But uva korban mitzora, for somebody who is becoming purified from mitzaras, hu asa maise patit, he chirped, he did an action that was chirpy, chirpy, chirpy. Yakriv tziporim, so he asked, his korban consists of birds because birds chirp. So again, he spoke Lashon Hara. He spoke about things they wasn't supposed to talk about. He was just chirping away, talking about other people in a negative light, which is asar. So therefore, he was afflicted with tzaras, so therefore he has to bring the korban consisting of birds. It alludes to the idea that he was bird-like in his behavior. Just like the sota alludes to the barley, alludes to the fact that she is suspected of being animalistic-like in her behavior. Uvedome lezeh, amru zichronim levracha binyan hanida, and in a similar fashion, the sages spoke about a menstruating woman. Mipneima amra Torah leishev shivanikiyam. Why did the Torah require her to wait 7 clean days after she finishes her period before going to the mikvah and resuming relations with her husband? Shetehei chaviva alav biyoser. So she should be extra beloved to him. That I guess the Torah had a good understanding of the male psyche, and that deprivation and then getting permitted again is very exciting, as opposed to the could cause boredom if you were just allowed to do it at all times. Now, you should all be jumping on me as to what on earth the Sefer HaChinuch is talking about over here. And if you're familiar with the Gemara, Nida Daf Lamed Aleph Amud Beis, that also, right, yes. Right, again, why does he throw this in here? I'm not sure exactly of the connection. It's just that it alludes to a certain thing, but the deprivation and the, yeah, right, it has nothing to do with Karbanos per se, but what's the problem with this line? Not even in terms of theme of the Sefer HaChinuch, but a pure halacha.
It's just the Daraisa, not the Rabbanan.
Correct. Why the Gemara, first of all, you could say, okay, maybe the Gemara is alluding to the Shivan Akim over there, but even if you look at the Gemara, it's simply talking about the halacha of Nida Daraisa. On the Shivan Akim, the 7 clean days after the woman finishes her period, is only the Rabbanan. On a Daraisa level, we have a difference between what we call a Nida, who's a woman who's having her regular period, and a Zava, who sees blood during the 11 days following the conclusion of her regular period, which is considered to be abnormal and requires an extra step of purification. But on a Daraisa level, on a Nida on a Daraisa level, a woman who just has a regular period and doesn't see any blood following the regular period, she has to count 7 days from the beginning of her period, not from the end of her period. And if she counts 7 days from the beginning of her period and she stops bleeding before the end of the seventh day, then she can go to the mikveh on the night subsequent to the seventh day, and then she becomes tahor, she becomes permitted to her husband, and at the times when Tumah and Tahara were practiced, then she would become ritually pure as well. That's the deraisa of Nida, that the Nida period lasts only 7 days, finished. But then, if you on the deraisa level, if she sees blood during the 11 days following those 7 days of Nida, then if she sees for 1 day or 2 days, she needs one clean day following those either 1 or 2 days of seeing blood in the 11 days subsequent to the 7, and then she can go to the mikvah if that day is clean. But if she sees blood for 3 days following the during the 11 days following the 7, then she becomes what's known as a zava gedola, a great zava, and she needs to wait 7 clean days following the conclusion of the bleeding. The way we have the practice nowadays is that any woman who sees blood is required to treat herself as a zava gedola, as a great zava, and she's required to wait 7 days before going to the mikvah after the conclusion of her bleeding. That's right. So again, midaraisa, it's seven. If assuming a woman only gets her normal period and it lasts for 7 days or fewer, then she only has to wait a total of 7 days. And again, derabanan, she has to wait 7 clean days following the conclusion of the bleeding. So, and what on earth is the Sefer Achina talking about over here? Yeah,
actually, this particular perush says that apparently he added the kiyam in order to maintain the rhyme.
Oh, it's still part of the poem. I thought the poem were ended.
It's still part of the poem.
Oh, Nikiyam and Sipporim, and then... But the meter is off then, because...
Well,
I don't know.
Oh, well.
That's why he's known as...
It was just there to maintain the rhyme, okay. No, I didn't have an answer. Yeah, it's a major problem. And also, again, it's not just that that's the Deraisa din of Nida, that there's no Shiva Nikiyam for a woman who has her regular period. But even in that Gemara over there, that Gemara, I believe, is quoting Reb Meir, if I'm not mistaken, who lived before the Shiva Nikiyam were instituted. So in Reb Meir's time, the women still only waited 7 days from the beginning of their period. So he's talking, that thing that he's quoting, the statement he's quoting, itself is only talking about the Deraisa din. There are a few stages in how this din developed. The original din, as formula, it says that Rebbe, the redactor of the Mishnah, he made a rule that if a woman sees blood for 3 days or more, 3 days or more at any time, then she has to consider herself as a Zava Gedola, because on a Deraisa level, a Zava Gedola is only if a woman, by definition, only if a woman sees blood for 3 days. So he made the Xera that if a woman sees blood for 3 days, then she has to wait Shiva Nikiyam. But then there was an added stringency that the Jewish women, it says that the Jewish women accepted upon themselves that even if they see a minute, amount of blood, then they still have to wait Shiva Nikiyam, even though on a Deraisa level, there's really no possibility that she could be a Zava Gedola. But anyway, that's the way it's practiced nowadays, that if a woman, again, if a woman sees blood of any type, then she has to wait Shiva Nikiyam, she has to wait 7 clean days before she goes to the mikvah. Probably he was just off the cuff. I don't know if he was necessarily thinking so hard. In fact, the word yamim also rhymes. That's a problem. He could have said, "Mnema amra Torah leishev shiva yamim." Why does the Torah say that a woman has to wait 7 days? Why Nikiyam? I don't know. So this is a little bit difficult. Uvemes shein kol ze ledaitam taklis hakavana bedvarim. But this is not, it doesn't mean that this is the only reason for this mitzvah. But raklo dia ki inyan mitzvah yisbal harbe ramazim milvadi karea gedolim v'chazakim. So the mitzvah could withstand you saying more reasons for this mitzvah besides the main great reasons and strong reasons for the mitzvah, which we don't necessarily know. Midinei ha-mitzvah, the lochos of the mitzvah of building the Beis HaMikdash, Masha Amr Zichronim Livracha, Shekodem Shenivne HaBayis B'Yerushalayim, Ayu Makrivin Karbonos V'Shar Mikomosam. That before the Beis HaMikdash was built in Yerushalayim, they used to offer Karbonos in different places. It wasn't only in the Yerushalayim that you were allowed to offer Karbonos. Aval Mishenivne HaBayis, Nesru Kolam Mikomos, Livnos Bambayis, Lashem Ulahakriv Sham. So after the Beis HaMikdash was built, then we are no longer allowed to build what's called a bama, which is an unofficial altar. Rather, we have to bring all our korbanos to Yerushalayim. Shenamar zos menuchasi adayad. This is where God's spirit is going to dwell forevermore. And there can be no other places that even compete at all with the Beis HaMikdash. These are the main things that you need to know when you want to build the Beis HaMikdash. Osin bo kodesh, the kodesh kadoshim. We have an inner sanctum and a sanctuary. And before the sanctuary, there is a vestibule. And all those three things are part of a greater building. So the main building of the Beis HaMikdash is called the Heichal. It consists of going from front to back. There is a vestibule. Then you have the biggest room, which is called the sanctuary, the Kodesh. And then way inside, you have the Kodesh Kadoshim, the inner sanctum. They made another wall around the courtyard of the building. Far away, so again, around the Mishkan, the tabernacle that was in the desert, there were also, they had a courtyard and there were beams, posts around, demarcating the boundary of the courtyard. So that place, that inner courtyard of the temple, that is called Azara. That is called the courtyard of the temple, Vakol Nikra Mikdash. And all that is called the Mikdash, the temple, as opposed to outside that, which is called Har Habayis. The outside, the borders of the building and the Azara. The Azara, the Korbanos took place in the Azara. That was the place that was really considered holy within the Temple Mount. That's where the official service took place. That's called the Azara. But on Har Habayis, there are much more lax rules. That you're allowed to go, you're not allowed to go into the Azara unless you're 100% Tahar. But if you want to go just onto the Har Habayis, which is much, much lesser level of holiness, you're only not allowed to have what's called a Tumah Hayotze Alav Migufo. That you're only not allowed to be tummy due to an emission from your body. So, for example, for a man, a seminal emission, or for a woman, for if she has her period or something like that. So then they're not allowed to go on the Har Habayis even. They haven't gone to the mikvah to purify themselves. And again, if a man wants to go on to the Har Habayis, for example, so he has to go to a 100% kosher mikvah. So nowadays, a lot of the times, men's mikvos, which are just for Kabbalistic purposes, that people want to go for extra spirituality or because they want to be makbid on going to the mikvah before davening after having a seminal emission. So those, we generally relax the standards somewhat from what we insist on we need for 100% kosher mikvah. That is used by, for example, for women who are becoming tahor from nidus, or for a convert, or for dishes, or something like that. Those need 100% pure mikvah, kosher mikvah, whether it's a man or woman. So if a man wants to go onto the Har Habayis, so he's not allowed to suffice with the more relaxed standards of mikvah that he would use for just a regular men's mikvah as they're known nowadays. He would need to go to 100% kosher mikvah. That would be good for women, or that would be good for dishes or converts. It's not kosher necessarily. It's just that they are not necessarily makbid on all the chumris or that we normally require for mikvos, or they not necessarily even makbid on that the water should be from rainwater and not from the tap. They'll accept water even for some mikvos that are for men for these not necessarily purely halachic purposes. Will accept water just from tap water, or they'll make some modification to the tap water that makes it a little bit better, maybe kosher midaraisa, but not midarabanan. There are ways that they relax the standards for mikvos for these types of things. So also, by the way, it's also interesting because they've actually found signs from the Beis HaMikdash in archaeological digs that are written in Greek so that everyone would understand it, saying Goyim are not allowed past this point. You know, other people are not allowed past this point. It's very only Jews allowed past this point. Whatever. It's very interesting. Those in Bamikta, I don't think there are any records of anyone complaining about it. As they figured, you know, if the Jew wanted to go to a temple of Apollo Lahavdil in Greece, they probably wouldn't be allowed all the way in. I don't know. I mean, I'm making that up. I don't know that for sure. But so I think they thought it was only natural that the Jews would not allow non-Jews into the inner portions of their temple. But Jews certainly are allowed to go to Har Habayis. They're allowed to pray. They're allowed to. That's not a problem. The only question is there's certain points in the Azara or whatever. V'osin b'mikdash hakelim aksuvim b'torah shetzrichin sham, and you make in the temple the vessels that are all that are required for the service there. Masha amru shekol klei hamikdash shenikvu onistiku shemiyad matichin osan v'osin osan chadoshim, that any vessels of the temple that got a hole or a crack, so they would melt them down and make new ones. V'sakin shenishman mikato nifkam ein metaknen oso ela gonzen oso miyad, and a knife where the blade fell out of the handle, or it got a nick in it. And of course, we know that a knife with a nick in it is not kosher for shechita. You know, rather, they don't sharpen it. Rather, they put it in geniza immediately, because again, it has a certain amount of holiness, so you're not allowed to just chuck it. Ein anios b'makom ashiros. We have a principle called, there's no poverty in a place of richness. So in other words, the Beis HaMikdash is supposed to display a certain amount of, you know, not needing to scrimp by. It's supposed to be beautiful. Yeah, grandeur, exactly. So it's supposed to be beautiful. Everything is supposed to be new and fresh, so it's not appropriate. You know, sort of like if you have a pair of socks with a hole in it, then if you are really rich, I mean, maybe not Jews, Jews probably anyway, but that fix it. But if you're really rich, then you would probably throw out the sock. But if you're not so rich, then you just prepare yourself with a needle and thread in order to save money. So you want to give an impression of malchus, of grandeur, when we have these types of things. And that's the reason also that you have a lot of times, this is the justification, where you have shuls, and especially chassidus, shabbatim, midrashos, that are built to a very grand scale. It's to show that, you know, there is an idea that when it's something having to do with God's service, it's supposed to be extremely beautiful and ornate. Yeah. Those in Beso Chazor, Gvulin, and within the courtyard you make demarcations, as I said before, ad kan li Yisrael, ad kan li Kohanim, only Jews are prohibited over, permitted over here, only priests are prohibited in the next level. Uvonin somukla batim lishdamish bain lechot tzarki hamikdash. So within the Azara, you build rooms to serve the purposes of the Beis HaMikdash. V'chol achas nikreis lishka. So each of these different rooms that were built in the Beis HaMikdash is called the lishka. The most famous one being the lishka sagozis, the chamber of hewn stone, that in which the Sanhedrin met, and it's considered, the Sanhedrin is only considered to have its full authority and full power when it's actually sitting in the temple to unite all facets of leadership of the Jewish people. The Yeser Prateha, the rest of the details, Kigon Binyan Habayis Ketzad, how exactly was the temple built, V'tavniso V'chol Midosav, and exactly how it looked in all the dimensions, V'Binyan HaMizbeach U'Mishpatav, and the building of the Mizbeach, which, by the way, does not need can function independently of the building of the Beis HaMikdash, the structure itself. And technically, you would be allowed to just build the Mizbech and offer Karbanos on the Mizbech, even if it were impossible to build the full Beis HaMikdash. That's why some people have suggested that even nowadays, when it's impossible to build the Beis HaMikdash for various reasons, one of them being that the site is occupied by certain mosques, and we might not know the exact location of all the things, and we don't have a paraduma to make things taller, and various technical reasons that it's considered to be impossible. The assumption is, although maybe some people challenge that, the assumption is that the full Beis HaMikdash will not be built until Mashiach comes. But some people have suggested the idea of building a Mizbeach on Har Habayis to share it. Why, you know, I don't think the site of the Mizbeach competes with any Muslim structures. Again, they might not be too happy about it, but I don't think we need to demolish.
They don't let you pray up there.
Yeah. We don't let you. But technically, there's no reason, per se, why we shouldn't have the Korban Pesach nowadays. Because the Korban Pesach is the Tumah, it's Doche Tumah, that if all of the Jewish people, or most of the Jewish people, are not ritually pure, then you're allowed to go on Har HaBayis, and you're allowed to shech the Korban Pesach and offer the Korban Pesach in a state of Tumah. So there's technically, if you build a mizbeach, but you need a mizbeach. You don't need the structure, but you need a mizbeach. So if you, technically speaking, we could figure out and come to a consensus about where the exact location of the mizbeach is supposed to be, because the mizbeach has an extremely set location, as the Rambam describes in detail in Hilchos Beis HaBechira. So if we could, again, people might have different theories about where it is, but if you could, I think there's one that's probably more mistaber than the other, more makes sense than the other. So if you could come to some consensus about where the Mizbeach is supposed to go, then technically speaking, we could offer the Korban Pesach nowadays. It would be very nice. Not advising going ahead and doing this tomorrow, but it's something, just something to think about. That halachically, it's feasible. It really is feasible to offer the Korban Pesach nowadays. Korban Maseches Midos. There's a whole tractate of the Mishnah that discusses the dimensions of the Beis Hamikdash, and that's called Maseches Midos. V'chein Tavnis HaMenorah V'Ashulchan U'Mizbach HaZahav, and the form of the lamp, and the table of showbread, and the golden altar that you offer the incense on. Umekoma and Behechal, and their place in the building, the Gemara Menachos, it's also explained in the Gemara of Menachos, and in Yoma. And it, vis-a-vis the, actually, as regards the form of the menorah, there's a big issue about that. And the issue being that on the Arch of Titus, there's a menorah. The Arch of Titus was erected in memory, as a triumphant arch, that because the Romans defeated the province of Judea and destroyed the Beis HaMikdash and brought all the spoils back to Rome. So on the Arch of Titus, which was completed around the time of the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash, the menorah has round branches. And that's the way we always assume, that the menorah's branches were round. And that's the way it's also, there's an organization called Machon HaMikdash that tries to research how we can try to further the building of the Beis HaMikdash as soon as possible. And it tries to build the different vessels for the Beis HaMikdash. They also built the menorah with round arms. If you also look at mosaics, synagogue mosaics from the times of the soon after the times of Beis HaMikdash, maybe, also the menorah is always depicted with round branches. Rounded branches. So the issue is that we have a manuscript of the Rambam's commentary on the Mishnayos in his own hand, in the Rambam's hand, and he drew a picture of the menorah with straight branches, like diagonal, straight branches. So based on this, the Lubavitcher Rebbe felt that it was a complete, the rounded branches were a complete mistake. He said, who says the Arch of Titus? Maybe they're not depicting the real menorah. Maybe it's just another lamp that they brought. Maybe the seven branched lamp was a common artistic design in Eretz Yisrael all the time. Although you're not allowed to build a seven branch lamp, actually, in Halacha. You're not allowed to build that because Lo Sasoniti, as we learned before, you're not allowed to build things that are reminiscent of the Beis HaMikdash outside the Beis HaMikdash, but okay. That's why they're always in shuls, for example, that have seven-branched candelabrums, then the middle branch or one of the branches always doesn't work. There's just a Jewish star on top. There's not a candle or something like that to avoid the problem of Lo Sasoniti. So in any case, Babish Rebbe felt, based on this manuscript of the Rambam of Perash HaMishnayis, that this was a complete mistake, and he considered it part of his mission to change the Jewish people's perception of the menorah, that everybody thought it had round branches. No, we have to change the Jewish people's perception. We have to make everyone think that the menorah actually had straight branches. So that's why if you look at every Chabad menorah that they light publicly, they're always very makbid that it has to have straight branches, because they have to spread the Rebbe's idea that the menorah really had straight branches, and we have to get rid of the silly notion that people mistakenly think that the menorah had rounded branches. So they're very makbid that it has to be that way. You know, they're not yotzei if they light a Hanukkah menorah with rounded branches. I mean, the Rambam, the real explanation probably is that the Rambam, was either just making a schematic diagram or he didn't know. I mean, all these other sources, if it's a little bit far-fetched to say they're depicting not the real menorah and the synagogue mosaic, so we assume either Rambam was just making a schematic diagram, and he didn't mean it to be the exact form that it was in. But anyway, the evidence, the Rambam didn't have access to all the evidence necessarily. He didn't see the Arch of Titus. He didn't see these mosaics that indicated that it's pretty clear that it was rounded, not like the Lubavitcher Rebbe. But again, he felt that he had to spread this message, and for that reason, they have to make straight-branched menorahs. Benohegis mitzvah zo bizman shirov Yisrael alad mosan. This mitzvah is applicable when most of the Jewish people are on their land. So that's also a very difficult line in the Sefer HaChinuch, because we know that the second temple was built when the Jewish people were not all on their land. You're right, not even most of them. But most of them stayed, if only a minority came back to Eretz Yisrael. Most of them stayed in their comfortable lives in Bavel. So that's the line is a little bit of a problem. The zo min ha mitzvos she'ena mutalos al hayochid ki mal tzibur kulan. So if you don't build the Beis HaMikdash, you are not committing a sin, but rather the whole tzibor is committing a collective sin, the whole congregation. And when the Beis HaMikdash is built speedily, then we will be in fulfillment of a positive commandment. Okay. Mitzvah Tzadi Vav, the 96th mitzvah, Shelo Lahotzi Badei Ha'aron Mimenu, not to take out the staves of the ark from the ark. Shelo Lahotzi Badei Ha'aron Mitoch HaTabos, we shall not take out the staves of the ark from the rings that supported the staves. Shenemar B'Tabos Ha'aron Yu'abadim Le'asur Mimenu, in the rings of the Aron shall the staves be, they shall not leave it. Let's just read right there. Okay, v'morahu shemitzvah zo b'chlal mitzvah sanoah goes adorosi. It also seems to be clear, since the fact that this is counted as a mitzvah, that this is a mitzvah that is applicable forever. Shein perush noah goes adorosi shel yipasek miyisrael ma'isos a mitzvah l'olam b'shum zman. It doesn't mean, we have a principle that we only count mitzvahs in the count of 613 mitzvahs that are applicable forever. So it doesn't mean, when we say applicable forever, it doesn't mean that there's never going to be a period in history when this mitzvah is inapplicable. What it means is, Elokeinu ha'inyan, kol mitzvah shelo nitztavinu aleha la'asosa rak bizman yadua velo yoser. Only things that are not included in that category is mitzvahs that are specifically limited to a certain time frame. For example, kol mashekosu hayu nechonim l'shloshes yomim, when God commanded the Jewish people to be start preparing for the receiving the Torah 3 days in advance. So that was only at one point in history. That never ever applies again. That when God commanded the Jewish people not to have the animals grazing by Har Sinai, that also was a very specific time. The Chol Kayotzebez, all these things. Also when they are commanded to, when they come into the land of Israel to write the Torah on these great stones. That's also an example of the of a mitzvah that's not l'doros. That was one specific time. Shlohaisa tzavah l'shal bilvad. It was only for a specific time frame. Elu yikru mitzvah she'ena noagos l'doros. These are called mitzvahs that are not permanently applicable. Aval kol mitzvah shelo nitztavinu aleha l'zman yadua. But any mitzvah that is not explicitly time limited. Aval b'shiyesh lahefzik bizman min hazmane mitzad galuseinu abesivas davar acher. Even though there'll be a point in history when it won't be applicable because we'll be exiled or some reason like that. Nowadays we have no Ark of the Covenant. So it's not, in other words, if the Aron still existed, theoretically this mitzvah would still apply. Mitzvah noheges l'doros nikreis. This is called a mitzvah that's permanently applicable. If man Aron chayovin anu leval naser badam imenu, that any time where we are in possession of an Ark of the Covenant, we're not allowed to take the staves out. Kadesh yotziu b'hem halavim, so that the Levites will be able to carry it. If we need to carry it around for a war to help us in battle, or for any reason that we need to transport it, and then the staves need to be there when we have the Aron. Mishorshei mitzvah. The reasoning for the mitzvah: Levi Sharon Mishkan Hatorav, he called Ikareinu Chvodeinu. The Ark is the abode of the Torah. And the Torah is the main point of the Jewish people and our honor. We have to treat it with the utmost respect and glory. For that reason, we're not allowed to take the staves out. Maybe we'll be in a rush and we'll have to schlep the Aron somewhere. Maybe we'll just stick the aron in the rod into the ring carelessly, and maybe we'll miss a ring or won't be completely stable. V'shem achas v'shalom yipol ve'ein ze kvodo. So this could potentially cause the aron to fall, and this is inappropriate for something that represents the honor of the Torah, because we have to treat it with the utmost respect. Aval biyosam bo muchanim le'olam v'lo yasur menu, but rather if the staves are there always, nasa osan chazokos harbei. Below Yerat HaKolabahen, so they'll always be stable, and there'll never be an issue when we want to carry the Aron using the staves. Beo Tamacher, another reason. Shekol Kli HaMikdash Tzurasan Mechuyeves Lirmos Inyonim Gedolim Elyonim. That the exact, again, we're getting a little mystical here, I suppose, that all the vessels of the Beis HaMikdash, their exact form is necessary for their full spiritual significance. That if a person, when he gazes at the ritual vessels and he's thinking about them, so if they don't have their proper form, it's not going to have the full impact that's necessary upon his thought processes. So God didn't want us ever to be adversely affected if we're looking at the Aron and it wasn't at its full potential, then we wouldn't be fully spiritually affected by looking at the Aron like we're supposed to be. Mitzvah Tzadi Zayin, the 97th mitzvah, mitzvah Sidur Lechem Apanim Ulvona. The mitzvah to arrange the showbread in the temple with frankincense. We have to arrange bread permanently before God in the temple. Shenemar, as it said, you shall place on the show table, place on the table, whatever, the ritual table, showbread before me always. Mitzvah, the reasoning for the mitzvah, mitzvah ha'adam. The reason that there is a constant mitzvah that has to do with bread is because bread is the staple food of the human race. So it has to be arranged in the temple to make sure that there is some ritual thing being done with bread at all times. So since it's a staple food of humans, so we have to have blessing about bread at all times. Since we're already going to, always going to be attempting to perform the mitzvah of God having to do with bread. So the God is going to bless our bread that we're actually eating. And it's going to be blessed in our innards to give us the proper nutrition. So when you do one of God's commandments, so you're going to receive blessing that corresponds to that exact commandment. So it has to do with your concentration on one particular facet of life that has a relationship to this mitzvah. And again, we have this sort of rationalistic thing that has to do with your thoughts about it, how you're connecting yourself to God, and for that way, you're going to get a bracha on this particular thing because you focus on it. Kematasi l'Ramban Zal, Ramban writes this way in his commentary on the Torah, as the sages tell us, haviu lefanav omer ba'pesach kedei shizbarchu lechem tvua shebasodos. So the reason for the korban ha'omer, which is the first barley offering, is to bring blessing to the produce of our fields. Naschu lefanav mayim becha kedei shizbarchu lechem gishmei shana. The reason for nisach ha'mayim, the water libation on Sukkos, is that there should be blessing in the rains. Tiku lifanai shofar shel ayil kedilizkor akedes Yitzchak. And when we blow the shofar on Rosh Hashanah, very timely, which is normally made of ram horn, so then that's going to cause us and God at the same time to remember, so to speak, the binding of Isaac when he was saved with a ram, and have mercy on us. And then therefore God's going to have mercy on us the way he had mercy on Isaac, and so have mercy on his descendants. V'al ha'lechem hazeh ba'atzmo amru, on this particular bread even, was very much the source of blessing. Ki mipnei shu tashmish ha'mitzvah nasa ratzon akel, since this bread was the actual thing that was exactly what God commanded us to do. It was the cheftza of the mitzvah, was the thing with which the mitzvah was performed. Haisa bracha dveika bobioser was extra super blessed. V'chol echa mina kohanim shigia lo mimenu kefuol haya savea. That when the bread was divided amongst the kohanim to eat, even if he got only a tiny bean-sized piece of the bread, so he would eat that and he would miraculously become sated.